What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and my co-host Thomas Drantz here. Drantzer, of course, covers the Canucks for The Athletic as well. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Oh boy, it's here. Canada, USA tonight in the Four Nations final. Drantz, how you doing, man? How you feeling?
I'm a little anxious, I'm not gonna lie.
Yep.
This feels big. This feels like the biggest hockey game certainly in like 15 years. You know, yeah, you have some like Game 7 Cup Final feeling throughout the day. Although not a sense of dread. I had a sense of dread going into Game 7 of the 2011 Stanley Cup Final.
Yes, I would say I'm more positively excited about this game than that one.
Yeah.
Because as you said, sense of dread, and it's like, they might just be out of gas.
Yeah.
And they were.
Yeah, you knew. You kind of knew.
Yeah.
But what's better than that? A whole day of building anticipation, and then the fine release of a full can.
Fascinating way to phrase this.
Of maple-flavored whoop-ass.
Nothing like a build and then a long build and then a great release. That's my idea of a Thursday night right there.
Me too, especially when it tastes like maple.
Oh boy. All right. So we will chat with ESPN's Arda Okal, Canadian working in the United States right now. So he'll have an interesting perspective on this one and the reception for tonight's game, all of that, the hype, the stakes. We'll chat with Arda at 1. We got a lot of open time though on the show as well. So get your texts in. We can dig into kind of every angle of this one tonight. How are you feeling? What are you thinking is going to happen? Have you changed your mind on this tournament? Have you changed your mind? Have you come around and really found yourself buying in unexpectedly? We'll get into all of it.
Who hasn't changed their mind on this tournament?
I mean, I haven't. Like, I was pro it before. It's become a bigger deal than I thought it would be, though.
Oh, no question. No question. Do you remember, like, we started even talking, there was a crossover, like, 2.5, 3 weeks ago, after sort of the tariff conversation really picked up, and I was like, hey, I feel like this could amp up the stakes, and no one wanted to touch it. You remember what I'm talking about?
We were like, ugh.
And now it's here.
The prophecy came true.
And now it's here. And like, this game is so amped up with the U.S. president's involvement and tweets and on and on. And I'm thrilled. I can't wait.
All right. As mentioned, Arda at 1. Let's go right now, though, to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks and also what's up at the Four Nations for today, February 20th. And of course, the headline is, it's here. As you said, the biggest international hockey game since 2010 and the Olympic gold medal final here in Vancouver between these two teams, Canada and the U.S. It's Canada and the U.S. tonight in Boston for the Four Nations final. And for all of the, well, Russia's not there and the Czechs aren't there and this is a made-up tournament. Which, by the way, always cracks me up because it's like, yeah, every tournament's made up. The Olympics did not spring from the earth without human involvement. The Olympics are also made up. Every tournament is made up.
But by the Greeks.
Well, no, not the modern Olympics. That's true. Sure. The modern, if somebody started the modern Olympics today, we'd be like, oh, that's so cringe. You're like copying the Greeks. No one's going to care about it. It's only like, 130 years ago that they started?
Yeah. Do you know that there was an annual game in ancient Greece for every year? And like the Olympics was just one of four?
I did not know that.
Yeah. And the other
what
ones.
What are the other ones?
We should
bring those back.
The other ones have preposterous names. The Pythian, the Nemean, and the Isthmian Games.
You're telling me this isn't better than the Isthmian Games? Come on! Of course it is!
Yeah, and they were known collectively as the Pan-Hellenic Games.
Pan-Hellenic, sure, yeah. Of course.
Hosted in different places, of course.
Oh, what, man, the Greeks, they were onto something.
Yeah.
See, they made up tournaments, and it was awesome.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Making up tournaments rules. Why is that supposed to be an insult?
No, yeah, you're right. Made up tournaments are the best ones.
Yeah.
No, and a tournament is only as good as the meaning ascribed to it. And the meaning ascribed to this one from the very get-go. I mean, one thing about the Four Nations, as I thought about it today, it's like We didn't even have to wait a minute before we got McDavid to Crosby to MacKinnon. And it was like, all right, yep. You know, and then you got the fights. You got Team USA just wrecking Finland in that third period, right? A pretty significant declaration of intent, something the Americans are good at from the United States. You then got the three fights in 9 seconds, which was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. You got the McDavid worldie. You got the way that that game unfolded. Team USA winning. Canada then needing to win that game against Finland. Coming out like gorillas in the first period. Dominant performance. And then it gets tight late. You get the Crosby empty netter. A sick, like one of the, another iconic moment for Sid. And then you get Team USA losing to Sweden. Because it's clear that they're running out of gas in this tournament and far too preoccupied with taking phone calls from world leaders and lying to us about whether or not Quinn Hughes is coming or not. Like, Team USA, it feels like there's been a lot of noise around Team USA in the last 36, 48 hours.
The interesting part is they've invited it all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this
the
is
round
not,
robin champions taking their eyes off the puck.
This is not the media or the outside world kind of attaching political stakes or political significance.
No, they've courted it.
Like, they are very much like, yes, the guy who's trying to annex your country and end sovereign rule of your country, we love it.
The guy who
we like it.
The guy who is speaking in humiliating tones about Canadian sovereignty, right? Like, let's we don't have to beat around the bush. Today is not a day to avoid politics, no matter what Bill Guerin says while courting politics directly on the president's favorite television station, having him talk to his players and then still failing to actually bring him to the game, right? Mm-hmm. Finishing in second place on Donald Trump's itinerary. Americans finishing silver. They love that. So, yeah, I mean, this is a big one. And look, I know there's a sense that like this one matters more because of the political context, because of the annexation talk on and on. And I get it. But I do think it's important to remember two things. One is Canada will never be the 51st state, but win or lose tonight, we're still the first nation of hockey.
Mm-hmm.
We are the most decorated international hockey country on the planet by a mile. Right. This would be America's first win at a best on best tournament in 29 years. In the time since then, Canada's had 2014, 2010 in Vancouver, an incredible win, 2002. Right. I mean, Canada is the dominant force in international men's hockey by a lot. And the United States would need decades of dominance to close that gap. By the way, we're also in a run where 4 of the last 5 first overall picks have been Canadian. Looks like it's going to be Schaefer this year. Looks like it's going to be McKenna the next year. Looks like it's going to be DuPont next year.
Let's go!
So, no, I know, the year after that, right? So, like, as much as, too, there's this sense that America's coming, you know,
much like Quinn Hughes.
Much
maybe
like Quinn
not.
Hughes, right?
Maybe they're not.
That's what I'm saying. Like, at the end of the day, you can only put 20 guys on the roster, and Canada's still, I hesitate to use the word, like, cranking out, but is still producing top-end talent at an unprecedented clip relative to the rest of the planet. And that's great. Like, I'm not someone who would ever say something like, this is our game. I know there's a feeling that, like, this is our game and we have to put... It's great that the United States is fielding an ice hockey roster at the senior men's level that's this sick. That's this incredibly, overwhelmingly talented. Like, it's good that hockey is thriving and succeeding and generating this much interest and being played this widely. And then this well by Americans, by Swedes, by Finns, by Russians. Like, we want more people to play hockey. We want more Leon Draisaitls in this league, right? Like, we want more people to enjoy this great game. It's not that we want hockey to be Canada's. We just want international hockey dominance to be Canada's.
Yes.
And so...
Well, and especially...
And it has been.
Especially...
My entire life.
Like, of course you want it to be... You want Canada to win no matter who they're playing.
Heck
right?
Yeah.
And if it's Russia, there's a historical and obviously current geopolitical implications there as well.
And
a historical rivalry.
And Russia's, like, got the international resume, right? I mean, Russia-Canada is Red Sox-Yankees in international hockey. And the United States is, like, the Blue Jays. They're like interlopers. They've had their moments, but they're not at the same level in terms of their history of winning best on best tournaments.
It's also, I think it's especially galling against the U.S., right? Like, again, you'd be hyped to beat Russia. You'd be hyped to beat Sweden, you know, Finland if they snuck in, whatever. You're always out to prove that Canada's the dominant team. But just to bring it back to the, you know, the whole ridiculous, like moronic 51st state annexation, like the frankly, like imperialist delusions. That's what it is. It's like delusional nonsense from politicians.
I hope so.
And from the players who are like very publicly embracing it and adopting it. There's something very galling about these guys who have made millions playing in a league that has Canada has supported so much, right? And like mm-hmm. Noah Hanifin until very recently played in Canada. Other of these guys play in Canada. The lack of respect, the utter lack of respect, the contempt really is what I would call it for Canada. Supposed to be a friend, supposed to be a partner in this league, in this sport. That's what makes this one feel bigger.
I would say more than anything, though, it's just ignorance. Like, I don't think they quite can wrap their heads around it. I don't think people in the United States take the annex. They don't hear the annexation stuff the way we hear it. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's partly what's going on.
Yeah, I think ignorance is a good way to put it. But it's just that kind of proud ignorance that is so ridiculous, especially in this context. That's why people in Canada are extra hyped for this one.
100%. And they should be. We all look, I love the United States. I've lived there. I've got a lot of friends there. I've got a lot of friends with military experience who live there, including my stepfather, on and on, family. So I love the United States. Most Canadians love the United States. It would be more fun. In some ways, it would be less fun, but it would be more comforting if this tournament was being played with the usual Canada-US stakes, where mm-hmm. at least there's a veneer of friendship that hovers over it. I love that that Canada's managed to stay above the media fray that has engulfed the Americans over the last 48 hours. I think that's a good thing from a Canada's chances of winning tonight. I expect a close game. I expect an incredibly hard-fought game. And, you know, I do think that it's worth reflecting really quickly on, like, walking around the city today and seeing, you know, like you, I mean, you are mapled up from head to toe.
Broke out the Team Canada 2010 jersey, got my Canadians hat on. I am ready to go.
And the 2010 Canadian jersey, by the way, the purest distillation of Canadian design excellence.
I feel like I'm like Don Cherry here holding up something for the camera. But
it's like the Canada arm and the 2010 Canadian Olympic jersey.
It's honestly a work of art.
Are
it's so beautiful. I love it so much.
Excellence in Canadian
design.
So
excited to have a chance to break it out today.
But, you know, I do think in this moment that hopefully is just bluster and will quickly pass without making us poorer or less free. I do think it's worth at least taking stock of where we're at in this moment and the feeling that you have today, the anticipation, that sense of community, that sense of Canadian pride that you have. Like, let's hold on to that and distill that, because it might be something we need in the event that we ultimately have to make some difficult choices in order to safeguard our sovereignty in the years ahead. So I do want to just say, win or lose tonight, I hope we can all reflect on this moment and this feeling and this pride we have to be Canadian and distill and utilize that to our national advantage in what could be some troubling years to come.
What a moment we find ourselves in.
Yeah, it sucks.
What a moment.
It sucks, but let's be a little clear-eyed about it.
Hopefully it's fun tonight.
Let's be a little clear-eyed about it and also not, keep in proportion that the future of Canada will not be determined by a game at the Four Nations final.
As much as we're talking about the political stakes, we're also all smart enough to know that, like, this actually doesn't change anything. You know what I mean? It's going to be a blast if Canada wins. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a bummer if they lose. But at a diplomatic level, we also know this doesn't change anything. But I think very well taken point by you that hopefully just that experience of cheering for Canada, coming together as Canadians, is something that lingers and something that lasts and a legacy of this tournament, hopefully, that we remember for years to come. We'll have more time to just really dig into the nitty gritty hockey stuff of this game. But just really quickly, I mean, I'm looking at Team Canada in this one tonight. And for me, it's McDavid, MacKinnon, Crosby, and Cale Makar, and I'll throw in that as well. Like, the true game-breaking guys on this roster for Canada. We've talked about it so much, the high-end talent they have. Yeah, there's question marks maybe at the bottom of the roster, certainly in goal. We all know about that. But they have more game-breakers than anyone at this tournament, including the U.S. You know, we saw Connor McDavid in the first game against the U.S. with a moment of magic, that incredible goal to open things, to give them the 1-0 lead. They need more of that. They need game-breaking moments, probably a couple of them against a really good U.S. team. Now, I think they have the horses to do it, again, like McDavid did. I think having Cale Makar back in the lineup makes a huge, huge difference for Canada.
Huge.
And, because I think you're talking about game-breaking moments off the rush. You know what I mean? Like, that could be a huge part of this. But it's those four guys. Yes, it's a whole team thing. And, you know, Brandon Hagel's clutch and Braden Point. I love Braden Point.
Well, I think you should put Braden. It's five guys.
That's fair.
Point belongs in that group.
That's fair. I love Braden Point. So throw Point in there. But, like, those four or five guys at the top of the roster, this is their moment. We know Crosby's done it on the international stage, of course. McDavid scored some great goals in this tournament. McKinnon scored goals. This is their opportunity to write that part of their legacy.
Well, and I think McDavid's legacy actually more than anyone else's kind of needs it, right? To this point in his career, you know, Connor McDavid doesn't have the huge prestigious win. Now, not that anyone would have said the Four Nations tournament 3 weeks ago was going to be at those sorts of stakes, but I do think it matters. You know, this is a guy who's won gold at the U20 level, the U18 level, and obviously at the World Championships, but the Stanley Cup has eluded him to this point, right? He's a five-time Art Ross winner. My God.
Connor McDavid
is so sick, man. Anyway, he doesn't have the huge signature win yet in his illustrious Hall of Fame level already career. And tonight, again, not that the Four Nations trophy was something he dreamed about as a child, but tonight would be a moment where if McDavid delivered, you know, I do think in some ways he has more to gain than the other names you mentioned.
He dreamed of beating the Americans in a big game.
Heck
though,
yeah,
for Canada.
He did.
He dreamed
of bringing Canada to its feet with some incredible display of speed and skill.
And yeah, it was probably for a gold medal at the Olympics or something like that. But
I don't think
he's fussed. Yeah, I don't think he's too fussed about where it happens.
Nor should
as
he
long
be.
As it happens. Exactly.
Nor should he be. So my point is, I do think McDavid, like the legacy conversation, like McKinnon's a Stanley Cup winner. Crosby's a Stanley Cup winner. Makar is a Conn Smythe winner and a Stanley Cup winner. Obviously, Crosby's already got the international success. Braden Point's a multi-time Stanley Cup winner. Like,
yep.
You know, you think about the greatest Canadian. Even Jordan Binnington has already won the game
Cup.
Of his,
yep.
and the game of his career on Boston ice.
Yeah. It's true.
You know what I mean?
What's like, the signature moment of Connor McDavid's career right now? It's losing in Game 7 against the Florida Panthers.
Right.
And that's a bummer, but that's what it is right now.
And it's the speech,
yep.
Right? It's winning the Conn Smythe as a losing skater, something we haven't seen almost ever, right? We all know how special this guy is, but he hasn't had the breakthrough to win. Tonight could be that. Like, I think the stakes for him personally are actually higher than they are for any other individual skater playing on either side of this game. And that's great because he's the best skater playing
on either
team.
So that's good.
Yeah. So let's go.
Motivated, fired up Connor McDavid. Yeah, let's go.
And you know, as much as like in hockey, like, would you rather have the best skater or the best goaltender if you had to win one game? Almost always you'd say goalie. But when that one player is Connor McDavid... You know what I mean? Like, let's go. Like, let's go. Tonight's going to be so much fun.
All right. We'll talk a lot more about the game, of course, and set it up. What's at stake in hockey terms, what Canada needs to do, concerns for Canada, all of those things. You can get your text in as well. But we'll continue with the whiteboard here. We'll go to the broadsheet. And there is some interesting details being offered, being reported by various insiders here on the Quinn Hughes saga, which ended yesterday with him not going to the Four Nations in any capacity, not medically cleared by the Canucks. And Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts today saying that he didn't think Hughes' absence had anything to do with Team Canada. Basically, the Team Canada said, hey, man, whatever. We're not going to weigh in on this one way or another. If Quinn Hughes is available, you guys want to play him, go for it. But he says he does think the Canucks were bothered by it. He says, I think Hughes wanted to come, but I think the Canucks were really concerned by the travel. Also notes there were some people nervous after Charlie McAvoy's injury. And then there was also a really interesting piece from your Athletic colleagues, Michael Russo and Chris Johnston, kind of reporting this out. And one of the key details there was that Mike Sullivan dropping the Quinn Hughes is coming on Tuesday might have come as at least a little bit of a surprise to the Canucks, that maybe there had been contact with Quinn Hughes, but not with the Canucks directly. And reading between the lines here a little bit, it does seem like when Quinn Hughes got the call on Monday night, that it was come so you can play.
Right.
And so that's a very different proposition than come in case we need you.
Come to watch.
Yes. And so I think that is a key thing here. Man, we're talking a lot.
I'm sorry. As one does.
Usually you watch, then you come. This is the opposite. Come and then watch. Anyways, very different proposition than...
I'm more usually involved directly, Jamie.
Just to go and sit in the stands or sit in the press box. And I know there's already been a lot of like, oh, how could the Canucks do this to him? He wasn't going to play. For all the jokes about like, oh, Jake Sanderson's going to get food poisoning, like the U.S. did not take that route. No. All their guys were healthy at practice and accounted for except Brady Tkachuk, and that doesn't matter because he's a forward anyway.
And he's playing.
So he wasn't going to play anyways.
Well, and reading between the lines of Hughes' commentary on Tuesday, it sounded like he wasn't that enthused. You know, the reporting is he would have loved to come to be an injury replacement, but his commentary kind of suggests otherwise, right? Like,
yeah.
Asked if, you know, he'd go just to support the team. He seemed, and you know, I don't think Quinn Hughes is generally in the business of spinning. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Quick, you know, I can't talk about that. Like, I don't think he would have said it the way he said it on Tuesday if the Canucks were, like, standing in his way of a life experience that he was really after. I think it would be a different story. Like, if he was eligible to play
and the
Canucks had stood in the way, I think that would be a very different conversation than the one we probably should be having, which is, you know, hey, maybe don't fly on Wednesday to Boston, fly back to practice on Friday to Vegas when you're already banged up, and then play in Vegas on Saturday and then fly to Salt Lake and play again on Sunday. You know, like, that's a ridiculous schedule for anybody, much less a player who's still working through, you know, a mid body injury reportedly, right? So anyway, I'll definitely try and get a little bit more detail about how everyone feels about this, but not a huge surprise given the stakes involved and the fact that Hughes was unlikely to play, that the Canucks would be less than enthused about his participation. This tournament and some of the injuries, though, like, because you might see some extra ones tonight given the pace that we expect this game to be played at.
And guys might not be 100%.
Guys are not 100%.
Yeah, the Tkachuks aren't 100%.
The Tkachuks absolutely are not 100%, and they're not the only ones. Crosby, on and on. And by the way, lots of those teams are still in, like, a battle, like a life-and-death battle to make the playoffs here. Right? So, yeah, I mean, there could be ramifications from this game that impact the NHL season, I think, without question.
Oh, yeah. But that's another big reason why it's important for hockey, for the NHL, that the stakes do seem so high, right? Because you can't complain about losing guys. Like, you can.
It's worth it.
If the tournament matters.
Yeah.
And the tournament matters now. So it kind of deals with the, oh, well, we might lose guys for injury. It's like, yep, you might. But it doesn't matter because the tournament's big enough, because it's a big enough deal that these guys still want to go and risk it. So it's just going to have to be a part of the landscape going forward that, yeah, some guys might get injured, and that's a really tough proposition for the NHL teams, but you're going to have to just take the good with the bad when it comes to having the tournament at this time. Some quick lineup notes here. Everyone except McAvoy healthy for the USA. Now, Cam Robinson from Elite Prospects, he's on the ground there, said that Kyle Connor was out doing some work late. It was an optional skate for Team USA, so I don't want to say 100% that Connor's going to be a scratch. Could be
looks
that,
like it,
could
though.
Be going in that direction. And I think Sullivan said,
if he got rinsed, that's all you need to know.
Yeah, and he was also skating in.
Although,
Brady,
why would you rinse a guy in the last day of an elective
tournament? It's not like he needs to stay. You know what?
Yeah, maybe he just wanted it.
If there's a game time decision or something, I don't know.
Can't eat his normal meal if he doesn't skate for a certain amount of time, right?
Yeah, so
I'm serious. Like, that's the way these guys
anyways,
are wired.
Mike Sullivan said it was going to be game time decision for his final roster. So look out for a potential Kyle Connor scratch.
And for Canada, have you done that yet? The Jarvis Konechny thing?
No. Seth Jarvis and Travis Konechny out. Canada continuing to look for the right mix in the bottom six.
And an interesting dynamic. If Kreider's in and Connor's out, then the United States is doubling down on size. If Jarvis is in and Konechny is out, which we know with a level of certainty, then Canada is doubling down on speed.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells you that it's one of those decisions ahead of the final that actually speaks volumes about where each team thinks their edge is, right? America wants to try and, play heavy, slow the game down as much as possible, rely on an area game, try to generate through layered traffic. They were able to slow the middle portion of game one between these two teams down, but they didn't generate much in terms of chances with that zone time. They still took the air out of the Canadians' rush attack, though, and that matters. Canada wants to attack off the Russian with speed, and that's how they think they can beat the United States. And that effort will be aided by the fact that this time Canada has Cale McCarr. Let's go.
All right, we'll wrap up the whiteboard there.
First time I've ever said something nice about Cale McCarr on the radio.
But it's funny too, because like as much as you've campaigned for Quinn Hughes in that battle, it's always been with the caveat that like Cale McCarr is the second best defenseman in the world.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
He's unbelievable.
It's never been like he's a fraud or
anything
like that.
It's never been to denigrate a great, like Cale McCarr is the best defenseman the way we traditionally think of defensemen.
Mm.
And that's, I think, partly why people miss what Quinn Hughes, like the reason Quinn Hughes is the best defenseman on the planet is that he's the only defenseman on the planet who impacts the game like he's a first line center. Like that's not normal. Right? That level of... Anyway.
All right.
It sucks that Hughes isn't playing tonight, despite, you know, what the fact that we all want to see Canada win.
That's the whiteboard for today. We have an open segment up next, so send your thoughts in. How you feeling before this one? 650. I think I know what text you just read. It's not for air. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Get your thoughts in. We're back for more Canucks Talk on the other side here on Sportsnet 650.
That's my idea of a Thursday night right there.
Me too, especially when it tastes like maple.
Oh.